Ezekiel 19 tonight. Now there's, I believe, 48 chapters. So we're making our way through the book. It's taken us a while to get here, but we're getting steadily along. And we've already looked at so much. I'll need to go back and we'll need to kind of somehow summarize or somehow picture this so we can kind of grasp what we've already looked at. And we'll do that perhaps in the coming days. Chapter 19 is the last chapter before we have a new timestamp. In chapter 20, he says it's the fifth month, the tenth day of the month. It's in the seventh year that the next thing happens. And so we'll come back and we'll look at that on the chart, perhaps next week or the following week. In the past few chapters, we've seen the illustration between the Lord and the children of Israel, what he did for them. And he pictured it as a baby who was left for dead and how he took care of her. And chapter 17, we saw the parable of the great eagle and how Israel decided to trust in Egypt. And we correlated that with what was happening in Israel, in Jerusalem at the time, that people were wanting to go back. It's hard to go through Ezekiel and get a full picture. It's impossible to go through Ezekiel and get a full picture without going back and reading 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles, reading Jeremiah and the other prophets at the same time, because they add so much context to the whole picture. But as we go along here, we were in chapter 18, and the Lord gave the instruction, or he was explaining, that the soul that sins, it will die, and that's the criteria. But anyone and everyone could repent, and he has no delight in the death of the wicked. In chapter 19, he is going to give a lamentation for the princes of Israel. And the princes are particular, not just the princes in general, but two in particular. That's why I gave you a chart tonight, because the chart has some of the kings listed there of the last time, and we'll look at that chart in a minute. We can break this chapter up into two main parts. The first part would be the lamentation, or the princes, excuse me. It talks about the princes themselves, these two lions. And then the last part, in the last five verses or so, it talks about Israel as this vine tree. And we'll get to that. If you look at verse 1, he says, "Moreover, take thou up a lamentation for the princes of Israel, and say." So there's the introduction. It's not the regular introduction to a chapter that we usually have. But he just says, "And you lift up a lamentation." So it's a command. It's a little emphatic because he puts the pronoun you. You lift up a lamentation or a wailing under the princes of Israel. So this, what he's saying here, it's for mourning purposes. What's going on is to mourn. It's a lamentation unto the princes of Israel. So it's has to do with these princes. And he says, then you will say. Now, these princes are kings in Israel, and you have your chart there. I'll mention their names now. The princes, the kings of Israel, particularly the sons of Josiah, Jehoahaz, Eliakim, and Eliakim is not particularly mentioned here, but we'll talk about him tonight, and Jehoiachin. And Jehoiachin was the grandson to Josiah. As you look at the chart here, you'll see you have Josiah in the green. And while Josiah is reigning, I have up above it, you have Nebuchadnezzar. He was the father of Nebuchadnezzar. He was still king in Babylon. And then Nebuchadnezzar, his first year is in the third year or so of Jehoiakim. And 605 there. And that's when he actually came to Israel. He carried away captive certain people, and he subjugated Israel. Daniel was among those who he took captive. But Josiah died. He died in battle in the Valley of Megiddo. And it says, and we'll look at the account, they made his son Jehoahaz king in his stead. Now, Jehoahaz was 23 years old. it mentions. He only reigned for 3 months. He ended up going into Egypt and dying there. And then there was another son of Josiah. He was made king, Jehoiakim. Now, there are two names very similar as we say them, so I'll make the distinction. The first one is Jehoiakim, spelled with a K in our English Bible. And then the second is going to be Jehoiachin, with a C-H. Two different men. One's the father, one's the son. And he was 25 years old when he began to reign, which is interesting. If Jehoiakim has only reigned 3 years, it means that Jehoiakim must have been older, which means if he was a son of Josiah, the firstborn was not put on the throne, which is kind of interesting. Maybe Josiah, I don't know. I don't know the reason. They were both wicked. Jehoiakim was pretty bad too. Maybe he was worse, and maybe that's why Josiah chose Jehoahaz, or maybe he didn't choose him. He wasn't expecting to die in battle, perhaps. And then you have, he reigned for 11 years, and then you have Jehoiachin, and he is the son of Jehoiakim, and he reigns for only about 3 months, maybe 3 months and 10 days, something like that. And then he's taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar. And then Nebuchadnezzar takes his uncle and makes him king. His name was Mattaniah, and Nebuchadnezzar changed his name to Zedekiah. So you have actually three sons of Josiah king at different times, which is interesting. So we'll reference back to this in a minute. But the two princes that he's referencing here is the first one, Jehoahaz, and then the third one here, who was 18 years old, Jehoiachin. Those are the two princes in particular that he's going to be talking about. And so he says, lift up this lamentation, this wailing. And he gives this introduction in verse 2. He says, what is thy mother? And then there's the answer, a lioness. She lay down among the lions. She nourished her whelps among young lions. So what is your mother? A lioness. Perhaps the likeness is made partly because when you think of a king, you think of someone who's fierce. Even the Proverbs, I believe, talks about that. Fierceness of a lion. And particularly these kings were fierce, no doubt. But maybe also it's because Judah is represented as a lion. And we'll look at those verses at the end tonight. So the lion. And it says here, your mother is a lioness. The mother of who? The mother of these princes. Okay, and it says, she lay down among lions. So she lays down between lions, or I believe this is a feminine word here, so it would be lionesses. Between these lions, she caused to lie down or to stretch out like a lion would. And then it says this parallel phrase, says she nourished her whelps among young lions. So among young lions, she nourished or she greatened her whelps, her cubs, the baby lions. And so that's the introduction. Then it's going to talk about this first lion, the first lion, which we are going to correlate with Jehoahaz. He says in verse 3, and she brought up one of her whelps. It became a young lion. And it learned to catch the prey. It devoured men. The nations also heard of him. He was taken in their pit, and they brought him with chains unto the land of Egypt. So there's the first lion. So literally, she caused one from her whelps to go up. A young lion, he existed. He was a young lion. And then he learned. He learned to tearing of prey. He says here that he devoured men. Literally, man he ate, or mankind he ate. He consumed. And then the nations heard. They heard of him, heard unto him. And in their pit he was taken. They didn't like what he was doing, so they took him. And then they caused to bring him by the hooks unto the land of Egypt. Here he says chains or hooks, into the land of Egypt. So this represents Jehoahaz. By the way, Jehoahaz, his name means Yahyah has taken, or he has seized. And he's probably the second son of Josiah. Let's correlate what he's saying here with what happened in history. Go over to 2 Kings 23. You go to 2 Kings chapter 23, and we'll look at verse 28. What we're going to do tonight, most of it's just going to be information to help us understand what's happening here and correlating different passages. 2 Kings 23, look at verse 28, where he says, "Now the rest of the acts of Josiah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the King of Judah? In his days, Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went up against the king of Assyria to the river Euphrates, and King Josiah went against him, and he slew him at Megiddo when he had seen him. And his servants carried him in a chariot dead from Megiddo and brought him to Jerusalem and buried him in his own sepulcher. And the people of the land took Jehoahaz, the son of Josiah, and anointed him and made him king in his father's stead. And Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his fathers had done. And Pharaoh Necho put him in bands at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem, and put the land to a tribute of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. And Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, king in the room of Josiah, his father, and turned his name to Jehoiakim, and took Jehoahaz away, and he came to Egypt and died there." So there's the account in 2 Kings of exactly what he's talking about here, this first lion. And some of the main things that they point out here is that the people took, it says the people, and the people of the land took Jehoahaz, the son of Josiah, anointed him, made him king in his father's stead. So the people made him king. And as we read here before, it talks about this mother, a lioness. It took one of her whelps what does it exactly say? "Then she caused one from her whelps to go up." Which is interesting. It's interesting how it says one of her whelps here in Ezekiel, because it's evidence that it was not the elder one who actually became. It wasn't the oldest one who became the king. It was just one of them. And also, it talks about how he was 23 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned only 3 months. And notice at the end where he says he took Jehoahaz, the king of Egypt did. He took him away, and he came to Egypt and died there. And back in Ezekiel, that's what it says. He says that, let me find the exact verse. In verse 4, where it says, "He took them with chains unto the land of Egypt." And that's exactly what happened to this prince, taken to the land of Egypt. And he died there. So that represents Jehoahaz. The second lion. Second lion mentioned here is Jehoiachin. Not Jehoiakim, the next king, but rather he would be the king after this king, Jehoiachin. You see it on your paper. If you look at verse 5, it says, "Now when she saw that she had waited and her hope was lost, then she took another of her whelps and made him a young lion." So then she saw, because she waited, and her hope perished. She waited, and there was no getting her king back. So they made another king. But in the illustration, the lioness makes another one of her whelps and sets him. It says, "Then she took one from her whelps, a young lion. She set him," literally speaking.
And you see that in verse 5. She took another of her whelps, made him a young lion. Verse 6, and he went up and down among the lions. He became a young lion and learned to catch the prey and devoured men. And he knew their desolate places, and he laid waste their cities, and the land was desolate, and the fullness thereof by the noise of his roaring. So you see the renown that this lion had. She took him, he became this young lion, he was set, he caused to walk in the midst of lions, or the lionesses, and he was a young lion, and he learned to tearing of prey and eating man, devouring men. So just like the other lion, it also includes this. It says here that he knew their desolate places and he laid waste their cities. That word is interesting. It's only translated here in this place as desolate places. In fact, in most places, it's translated as widow, as a widow, which is interesting. And I can see where they correlate. A widow is someone desolate of a man. And so it could be that it's referencing cities. Other people take it to mean this is literal widows. And it's talking about Jehoiachin, how wicked he was. Not only did he go and he killed men, but then he caused to know the widows of him, to know in an immoral way. So I mentioned both things there. I tend to think of it more as, no, I think it's desolate, as they translate it here, their desolate places. He says, and their cities he caused to waste. And that word waste there has the idea of being dry. You know, you think of something, it's just been left out there and it kind of dries up and it's a wasteland. And that's what happened here. And he says in verse 7, the second part there where he says, and the fullness thereof. So the land was desolate and the fullness thereof by the noise of his roaring. So the earth, it was desolate. The fullness of it. Why? It was from the voice of his roaring. So he was really causing a disruption in the land. That's what they're communicating here. And in if you look at verse 9, now, verse 8, we'll back up. He says, then the nations set against him on every side from the provinces and spread their net over him, and he was taken in their pit, and they put him in ward and chains and brought him to the king of Babylon. They brought him into holds that his voice should no more be heard upon the mountains of Israel. Verse 9 in particular is why it's very evident that he's not talking about Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim was never taken to Babylon. He died in Israel. But Jehoiachin was taken. And he's mentioned here as being the second lion. And so these nations, they came. Then the nations set upon him from round about, from provinces. Then they spread out upon him their net. In their pit he was seized. Then they set in the cage, in the hooks, or the chains there, and then they caused to bring him unto the king of Babel. So they captured him and they took him. And they even elaborate by saying, he brought him into holds that his voice should no more be heard upon the mountains of Israel. So they captured him and he would never be heard in Israel again. And in fact, he would die in Babylon. So this is Jehoiachin, the son of Eliakim. I'm using Eliakim to make it easier. It was this man that was brought to Babylon, and we'll look at that. Why don't you go back, flip over to 2 Kings 23. We'll continue with the narrative that he gives in verse 34, chapter 23 of 2 Kings, verse 24. And Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, king in the room of Josiah his father, and turned his name to Jehoiakim, and took Jehoahaz away, and he came to Egypt and died there. So Eliakim. The difference between the change of names, you'll see they're very similar. They end with the Akim. You see that, E-Akim. So they're very similar. The only difference is Eliakim, the original name, it just means God. That's the L part. I didn't write the meaning of the last part. I apologize. But they changed his name from God with the second part to Yahya with the second part. You have the Yoh or the Yah. The Yah is Yahya, and the El would be God. So that's the only change in his name from Eliakim to Jehoiakim. He changed his name, and he became king. It says in verse 35, and Jehoiakim gave the silver and the gold to Pharaoh. But he taxed the land to give the money according to the commandment of Pharaoh and exacted the silver and the gold of the people of the land and everyone according to his taxation to give it unto Pharaoh Necho. And Jehoiakim was 25 years old. So I bring that up because how old was Jehoahaz? He was 23 years old. So he's older, which is interesting. When he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Zebudah, the daughter of Pedaiah of Rumah. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his fathers had done. And he talks about how Nebuchadnezzar, he comes up against him. And you can see on that chart where he comes. He comes in the first year of his reign, 605 or so. And so they came up. And look at verse 5. Well, there's so many things that happen. If you back up to verse 3, he says, surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah. What came upon Judah? Well, not only Nebuchadnezzar, but when he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar after 3 years, then they fought against the Moabites, against the Syrians, the Chaldeans, the Ammonites. They all came up against them to destroy them. And this came by the commandment of the Lord upon Judah to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh according to all that he did. And also for the innocent blood that he shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, which the Lord would not pardon. And now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? So Jehoiakim slept with his fathers, and Jehoiachin, his son, reigned in his stead. And the king of Egypt, it says, came not again any more out of his land, for the king of Babylon had taken from the river of Egypt unto the Euphrates all that pertained to the king of Egypt. By the way, from the river Egypt all the way to the Euphrates, that was supposed to be the border of Israel. And in fact, it was during Solomon's day, and it will be yet future. And then it says in verse 8, Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months, and his mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father had done. And at that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city, and his servants did besiege it. And Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, went out to the king of Babylon, he and his mother and his servants and his princes and his officers. And the king of Babylon took him in the 8th year of his reign. And he carried out thence all the treasures of the house of the Lord, the treasures of the king's house. So all of these people came out, and even Ezekiel was among them. And he carried away, verse 15, and he carried away Jehoiachin to Babylon, and the king's mother, and the king's wives, and his officers, and the mighty of the land, those he carried into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. So all of that took place, and that's the second lion. And you can see the correlation there. And then he sets up Mattaniah and changed his name to Zedekiah. And he's king right now at the time that Ezekiel is prophesying. So you get a picture here, and this is a lamentation. because of what's happening with these kings. They're set up and they're taken away, one to Egypt and then the other to Babylon. It's interesting, it didn't take them very long for Israel to want Egypt's help again. Before they were servants, and then they want their help again. But we'll come to that later. Back in Ezekiel chapter 19, let's look at the second part here. So those were the two lions. In verse 10, he changes gears a little bit. First, he says, in verse 2, what is thy mother, a lioness? And in verse 10, he says, thy mother is like a vine. So another comparison. And it's still a lamentation about the princes, but he's focusing here on the mother, if you will, Israel itself. And it's like a vine, he says, in thy blood, planted by the waters. That's a little strange. Little strange terminology. Your mother is as the vine in your blood. And I believe what he's talking about here with blood, it's not talking about human blood. But have you ever heard the phrase, the blood of the grape? If you haven't heard it, we'll read another passage who uses that same phrase, the blood of the grape. And I believe it's talking about the fullness of the juice. And you'll kind of see that because this vine is prospering. Your mother is like this vine in your blood, perhaps that fullness of the juice, upon waters being planted, being fruitful and full of branches. She exists from many waters, so it's prospering. In verse 10, planted by the waters, she was fruitful, full of branches by reason of many waters. Verse 11, and she had strong rods for the scepters of them that bear rule. And so, again, it's kind of a strange illustration, maybe for our own minds, but you have this vine and these branches, and they were strong rods, and he's picturing them as scepters here for ruling, because it was a fruitful place, and they had strong rulers. And she was exalted. In verse 11, it says, the second part there, and her stature was exalted among the thick branches, and she appeared in her height with the multitude of her branches. But she was plucked up in fury. She was cast down to the ground, and the east wind dried up her fruit. Her strong rods were broken and withered. The fire consumed them. And now she is planted in the wilderness, in a dry and thirsty ground. And fire has gone out of a rod of her branches, which hath devoured her fruit, so that she hath no strong rod to be a scepter to rule. And that's really the basis of this lamentation. The scepter's gone. You know, there's no one to rule. They're carried away. And you say, well, they have a king. They have Zedekiah. Well, he's not really the rightful king. The line doesn't go through Zedekiah. But anyhow, actually goes through Jehoiachin here, I believe. And so he gives this illustration of this vine, this tree. It was fruitful, but then in fury, it's going to be plucked up. It's going to dry up. The fruit's going to dry up. The rods that were good for to being a strong scepter, they're no longer there. And this is where we would come to the crux of the matter, okay, and all of the things we've looked at. And this lamentation is not just, it's sad. If you're an Israelite, you have to kind of put yourself there. You think your nation's gone. And maybe for us believers, it's a little difficult because we understand this world's not our home. You know, this doesn't matter. But it was different back then because the Lord had promised them this land and that he would prosper them in that land, even physically so. And so they're looking for deliverance. They're looking for to be a prosperous nation, to be all that God promised them to be. And it seems like all of that's crumbling and falling down. And they're kind of in mourning. And they have been really ever since the being carried away to Babylon. They've not been restored. And so that's sad, but But it's even greatened when you understand the blessing that Jacob gave to his sons. When you go back to Genesis chapter 49, if you look at Genesis 49, you'll remember when they're all there, Jacob's about to die, and he brings in the children to give them a blessing. He blesses each one of them. I say blesses them. Not everything was good that he had to say about his children. But in Genesis 49, look at verse 8. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down. He crouched as a lion. And as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? Yeah, who's going to go poke the lion, right? Nobody wants to do that. He says in verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Binding his foal unto the vine, and his ass's colt unto the choice vine, he washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine and his teeth white with milk. So there's the blessing to Judah. And so he makes a promise. The scepter will not depart from Judah. Judah was supposed to be this lion, the fierce lion, and nobody was to be able to provoke him. They wouldn't want to provoke him. And he says the scepter will not depart from Judah, and yet the kings are being taken away. One into Egypt, one into Babylon, the other dead. And then Zedekiah, he's on the throne, but he's going to be killed as well. And so they're losing everything that they had. And this is a lamentation for the leader. And so the Lord promised here that there would be that the scepter would not pass from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come. Now, who is Shiloh? He is peace, or he is completeness, until the finisher, the completer comes. And it says, him shall the gathering be. And those last two verses talk about him. Binding his foal unto the vine and his ass's colt unto the choice vine. It brings back memories of Christ's triumphal entry. And he washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine and his teeth white with milk. And there's other things we could look at. But you think about it. They have not had a king since Jehoiachin. Jehoiachin was the last king to sit upon the throne of Israel. They have not had a king. And you say, really? Well, even during this time, during the exile, they had governors like Gedaliah and Nehemiah and perhaps others. And later there would be priests, and these priests would be sort of leaders. You would have the Maccabean revolt. And the Maccabees, they were priests, and they kind of became kings in a sense, although they didn't call themselves kings because you weren't supposed to be king and priest. The law prohibited that. And you can see some of the Pharisee ideas coming into play during that time, the intertestamental time before Christ. And you had these priests, and they kind of became like kings, but they were not kings, and they were not they weren't of the line of Judah, so they couldn't be the kings. So they were kind of pseudo-rulers for a time. Later, Israel would ask Rome to help intercede. Come and help us. And so Rome said, sure, we'll come and help you. But in return, they became Rome became the governor over the land. They became a state of Rome. And Rome set governors over different provinces. Herod became one of those governors. And he wasn't an Israelite. He was actually a Nabatean, or really an Edomite. And see, Israel didn't like Herod, a lot of them didn't, because he's not a Jew. And in fact, Herod would go on to become a king. They would let him become king of the region. Herod the Great, this is the one who killed the babies when Christ was born. And they would let him become king. Rome did, because he befriended some of those guys over there. And but many of the Jews did not like him, because they're looking for a Messiah, for a king to deliver them so that they can have their nation back. And then they have this king, but he's not a Jew. He's not of the tribe of Judah. In fact, he divorces his wife and marries a Jew, so it would be a little better, but it didn't fix the problem. And no doubt there were some Herodians who did follow. They liked Herod. And then you had other factions who didn't, because they're looking for a Messiah. And later his children, they would become governors and kings. That's mentioned during the time of Christ and even after in the book of Acts. And you have Pilate, who's governor of Judea. And so you have governors and you have different people, but they're not kings. They're not the kings from the line of Judah that God promised. And so they still haven't had their king, their Messiah. And so they're kind of thinking, well, okay, what's happening? We're waiting on the Messiah now because we don't have any other kings. But the promise is still true that the scepter has not, nor will it depart from Judah. And Jesus Christ has already begun his kingdom. Did you know that? He's already begun the kingdom. He came preaching. He says, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. He says, the kingdom's here and everyone's pressing into it. And if you know Jesus Christ is your Savior, you've already entered into the kingdom. That's what Christ said. At the moment of salvation, we're translated into the kingdom of his dear Son. I think that's in Colossians. He talks about it. So he's already begun his kingdom, and soon he will take possession of the land. He will restore judgment into the land. He will set up a physical kingdom, and that's going to be a very interesting time. But this is a lamentation. I mean, you think about Israel today. If you ever listen to any of their music, it's a lot of it is kind of it's mourning. Whoa. They're mourning, you know, and they feel like they've been tossed around everywhere. And it's as if the time from the captivity is really not ended, in a sense. I know they did come back from their captivity, but they were never really restored. They never had their king back. They never had their kingdom back. And so they're still looking for their Messiah. So it's a lamentation because of the princes, the lawgivers. These scepters are gone. They're gone, and Israel's desolate. We'll look at we'll either review, we'll probably do a little bit of review regardless, next week, and also perhaps we'll be in chapter 20. But some things to think about, correlate all these things together. Dear Lord, I thank you for your goodness. You are always true to your word. I pray, Lord, I ask you to help us to understand some of the significance of these things, because they are significant, not only to this time period, but it will be significant to our understanding the New Testament and the mind of people at that time, and to understand even what happened before, and to understand what you're doing to the nation or for the nation Israel in the future. And Lord, I pray that we would not disregard any part of your word. Please bless tonight and bless those who couldn't be with us. Encourage them. And we pray this in Christ's name. Amen.